Plateau, and this is part 2 in my urban camping mini-series. In this episode of the How to Be an Urban Camper series, we'll be talking about shelter. Shelter is kind of one of those basic needs, especially when you're urban camping, you give that a lot of thought. And in fact, it's that sort of one thing that you don't have when urban camping. It's the thing that really defines you as an urban camper. You don't have a place to stay. So how to find shelter, some good places to think about, and that sort of thing is what we'll talk about. And I guess I'll just run through the different options that you might have. So one of the places that you can stay if you're going to urban camp is in a car or a van. And when I said that I was staying in a van this most recent time that I was urban camping, people got really, they laughed at that. And it turns out that there's like a Saturday Night Live skit, I think, about some guy who lives in a van down by the river. So if you don't know that comedy routine, you should look for that online, because it is actually quite funny, and it has nothing to do really with urban camping. Well, I guess it does, but not really. So yeah, you could live in a vehicle is the point. And here's an interesting story, dear listener. I was sitting at a bagel store having a bagel and coffee, and this was in a pretty good area of the city, and I was minding my own business, but I heard behind me some people talking, and it was clear after a while that this one girl was sort of naming off this list of the things I want to do before I die. But you could tell it was a very fantastic kind of list. It was one of those kind of like, think big, you know, list everything you could possibly want to do to achieve your dreams and all that other nonsense. And she was reading this list, and there was the usual stuff, you know, like dance with, name some popular star. You know, I want to dance with this male star all night long. I want to go to Paris and London and wherever else, you know. And I mean, it was nice. I don't mean to make it sound like, you know, I mean, it was very nice. It was great stuff. But one of the things that she said was, I'd like to live out of my car for a month. And this was literally right next to London and Paris and eat caviar, you know. And then it was like, and live out of my car for 30 days. And I just thought, wow, that is completely unexpected. So I don't know if it's becoming sort of quasi-hip to think about urban camping or something, or what's going on exactly. But yeah, that's what was on her list. And I thought that was interesting, because people don't generally think of that, really, I think. Of course, the reality of living out of your car for 30 days or for longer than that becomes fairly complex. Because if you think about what that means, it means that you're, well, in a vehicle overnight, and that you need to find a place to park that vehicle, and you need to not be discovered. So these are very tricky things in some cases. And there are some places that are safe to do this in, and some places where it is not safe. Scarlett and I found out the hard way that staying in vehicles parked in a city park, or I imagine any kind of park, overnight is a really, really bad idea. Whether it's posted or not, I think city parks generally close overnight. Could be not true somewhere, but at least in the city, in a traditional like city with buildings, and they have like these designated city parks, they close at night. And if you're in a car and you're parked near the park, you're basically loitering or trespassing or something like that. And they will, they being the police, will harass you, awaken you at 3 a.m., yell at you, threaten you, demand to see all of your personal identification, all that good stuff. So keep that in mind, that you can't just park any old place you want to if you're going to be living out of your car. There is one known place that is actually fine with you doing just that, you parking there overnight, sleeping there, whatever. And that is interestingly enough, Walmart. Yes, it's true. Walmart has, I think it might even be a written social contract. I was going to say unwritten social contract, but they have some kind of rule that you are allowed to park in their parking lot and camp there. And this is why, if you think about it, when you're driving around and you go out to Walmart, and way back in the back of the parking lot, there's always like that one RV, there's that one camper with like the generator on the back and stuff, you know, and you think, you probably don't even think about it at all. I've noticed it before and kind of wondered about it, but I always thought it was like someone traveling across country stopping in at Walmart. But a lot of them actually are there living in the Walmart parking lot. And you can do that for free and no one will harass you. I should say no one from the law will harass you or from Walmart. Whether other weirdos will harass you, I can't really guarantee. But you can definitely do that. That's a great resource to know about. I have used it often. So keep that one in mind. Another pretty good place are well-populated rest areas, but rest areas tend to be on the highway, and that's not always convenient. So whether or not that would work for you or not, I'm not sure. And I wouldn't recommend the small, creepy ones. I'm talking about the sort of the big, well-lit ones, really the ones that have a lot of like all-night truck traffic and stuff like that. Those are great places to stay at. In your vehicle. Now, of course, there is always street parking, and street parking can be great, and it can be dangerous, and it can be susceptible to being seen and yelled at. So it really depends, and it all depends on you. And this is where urban camping kind of starts to hone your skills on sort of an awareness of your surroundings. And this is what I'm talking about, like by hacking society or social engineering, because you become a lot more aware of how things are in a neighborhood. You need to, before you commit to parking on some street corner and going to sleep there for the night, you need to commit to getting to know that neighborhood. And ideally, this is even something you do before starting your journey down the whole urban camping path. Scout out the places that you think you can stay. And I mean really scout it out. And this is exactly what I did when I was going to be urban camping and I knew that I wasn't going to have really any friends or any building to stay in. But I just recently acquired a van for free. So I thought, well, I could try this. And so before I tried it, I would walk around the street at different times of the day and kind of see what was going on. Most importantly, of course, at night. And I walked around the whole neighborhood that I figured would be the kind of the ideal target for my new home. And I did that. I completely scouted it out at all hours of the night and got a really good feel for what kind of neighborhood it was. And it was a slightly upscale neighborhood, so it was safe from thugs. But the flip side of that, of course, sometimes can be over watchful neighborhood watches. But there really wasn't in this place. I found that you could pretty much do whatever you want to, whenever you want to. There was a lot of college traffic and stuff like that. So it gives you a little bit of, there's a lot of activity a lot of time at odd hours of the night. It was a really good place to kind of camp out for 8 or 9 months. Of course, if you're going to be doing that, if you're going to be camping out for 8 or 9 months, you have two different options. And I've seen actually both of these in practice. One is kind of the quasi-Walmart approach. And actually, you know, I mean, depending on the neighborhood, obviously. But if you have friends or neighbors acquaintances, and you can literally say, look, I'm going to live in my car for the next 8 months. Do you mind if I park on the street and do that? They might be fine with it. And believe it or not, I've seen exactly that. I've seen a person do that. It was a known fact that he was living, of course, he had an RV or whatever, a small RV. I don't know what else they're called. RVs, caravans, you know, these big kind of oversized vehicles with little houses on the back. So he had one of those. So it was quite well known that he was living there, he was staying there. It wasn't an issue. I wouldn't do that myself, but apparently some people can. It depends on your personal style. What I would do is move, rotate my schedule. You know, like on Monday I would stay on this street corner, on Tuesday I would stay on that street corner, on Wednesday I would stay a little bit, not across town, but a little bit farther away, and so on. And so I was never really, I wouldn't literally just camp out in one spot, because that kind of invites interest, I think. Whereas if it just becomes another car that kind of sometimes parks here, sometimes parks there, depending on the day of the week, stuff like that, it becomes less noticeable. So obviously part of the goal here is to become not very noticed. You do kind of want to, well, you do very much want to blend into your surroundings. People don't typically look at the cars out on their street. I mean, if you think about what you notice when you go outside of your apartment or your house, do you really look at the streets around around the area? Do you see who's parked it around this around your house? Have you ever noticed that a car has been parked somewhere for a long time? I think it varies. I really do. I think it varies a lot. I remember that I used to not notice those things at all. But lately I guess you'll always kind of notice like a strange looking car, like a car with a window missing and it's just got plastic taped over where the window should be. That you'd notice if it was parked there for like a week and a half. But would you just notice, like, you know, a Honda Civic just kind of parked out across the street for like 9 days? And kind of would you start wondering why it was parked there for 9 days? So it's just kind of interesting to see what people do and don't notice. And it'll typically surprise you, of course, what people do and don't notice. Although I have to say, quite happily, I wasn't really ever noticed. I must have rotated quite well. The hardest time if you're doing something like that, if you're living literally in your vehicle, I think one of the hardest things is getting out of the vehicle. That's the hard part. Because getting into it late at night when no one's around, that's easy. Go in, you lay down, you go to sleep. Simple. But waking up in the morning, you know, when you're waking up and you don't know what time it is and you don't know how many people are people around your car looking at you, or are they driving by, and if you pop up suddenly, will they notice you? All these kind of concerns of what are people really looking at. And of course, generally speaking, you will notice that most people, and there's always that really, really dangerous exception, but most people aren't noticing anything at all. That's just the fact. And you will learn that if you urban camp. You will learn that not just theoretically, you will actually see it in practice, where people don't notice some of the things going on around their own neighborhood, sometimes in their own front yard. And then yet, strangely, they'll notice if you, litter or something like that. You know, I mean, people are so weird. It's just, you can camp out in front of their house for 3 days in a row. You could be a private investigator, for all they know, or a burglar, a potential burglar, and they would never even notice you. But then if you're walking around and you have dreadlocks or something, they'll yell at you for being a hippie. You know, just bizarre stuff. But this, of course, is one of the dangers, too, is that when you're living in your car, people don't know who or what you are. And if you are noticed, the suspicion could be dangerous, actually, because they don't know if you're scouting out the neighborhood to see when people aren't around so you can break into their houses, or whether you're just a bum. And if you're a bum, are you dangerous or not? Or if you're not a bum, are you dangerous? Be mindful of how you might appear to people if they are noticing you, and that's important. Also be mindful of where you're parking. If you're parking near a bank or an elementary school or places that are, in some cases, should be a little bit more sensitive to the fact that some stranger seems to keep parking outside of that establishment, you know, every day, be very mindful of that. That's inviting trouble. One place that might not invite trouble are private lots. And it kind of obvious, I mean, private means that you may or may not even have access to it. But depending on how you can swing employment and stuff like that, you may luck out and get some kind of car pass. Whether it's because you're a student or because you're employed for some establishment, if you can get a car pass, like a windshield pass, to park in a place, that could be your free ticket to really every night safe parking every night. That really paid off for me. I about midway into this past year, obtained a car, a little badge for the car, for the van that I was living in, and it gave me permission to be in a school lot. And I thought that could be really good. And actually it was. I got to park in the school lot as often as I wanted to, day or night. No one would ever bother me. And people would just assume, you know, if it was parked overnight, people assumed that I was on the night crew or whatever, or that I just left it there for, you know, as a utility vehicle or whatever. So that was really, really beneficial. So if there's any kind of job that offers a parking space or something like that, then that might work for you as well. Don't forget those kinds of deals. Another thing that you could live in, of course, is an RV or caravan. Tend to have a big advantage in that they look fairly normal, they're very self-sustained, and they have a really nice level of privacy. The one thing that you realize in a car or in a van or whatever is that if you're out on a street, there's very little separating you from the outside world. You're just in a vehicle, and it's fairly simple to kind of detect you and bang on the window and insist that you open up, that kind of deal. And police will do that without hesitation. They really don't care. I don't know that they have a right to harass you, but apparently those streets that you're probably paying taxes on or whatever, they don't really belong to you to live on. So if you're doing that, that's a potential risk. Whereas the RV situation seems to be, and again, I don't know if this is a legal precedence or something, or if it's just perception, but police don't tend to, at least in my experience and in the experience of this other person that I knew doing this, they don't seem to harass RVs, because they don't really know if you're in there. They don't really know what's going on with that RV. I mean, are you living in it, or is it just parked there because that's where you parked it? So it's very difficult for people to harass you as long as you kind of are respectful of the area and stuff when you're in that kind of vehicle. And again, like I say, Walmart has no problem with you parking in their lot and just chilling. Remember that. Of course, so those are the vehicular options. There are also friends that you might have, and this kind of goes back to couch surfing, but it's a little bit more broad than that, and that is that you could stay with your friends. Now, I know at least one person who, as far as I know, stays with friends a lot. Like, that's this person's primary way of getting shelter. At least that's my perception. I don't know for sure. But I don't think I could do that often. Well, number one, I don't have that many friends in this particular city. And I think if I stayed just with like the one or two people I feel close enough to actually ask that of, I think I would kind of wear out my welcome eventually. I think. Now, I could be wrong. But my personal style is that I think I would I would feel awkward after a month, you know. You can do it, and then again, maybe not. And it really all depends, and this, again, gets into the social engineering stuff in a very positive way. But if you're going to stay with people, obviously, again, you need to rotate your schedule. You don't want to impose on people every day, every night of every, you know, for a month. You probably want to kind of rotate that out, make sure that you're spending enough time with them to make it seem like you're a gracious guest, and yet not so much time with them that you feel like you're imposing. That's an important distinction as well, and one of those that I learned the hard way as well. I used to think, well, yes, I'm staying with them, so that means I should completely make myself scarce during the day and just get out of their way, and then I'd just come back late at night. Well, that doesn't go over very well, actually. It makes you seem like, well, like you're using it as a hotel, which really you are. So you have to be nice. You have to be friendly. You have to be, you know, you have to be a good friend, and that's part of their deal. That's what they get out of this. They get a good friend right there in their own apartment. Hey, it's easy access. It's great, fun. But at the same time, you have to be aware of other people's emotions enough so that when you are wearing out your welcome, you can make yourself scarce, or you can stop out and pick up dinner for that night, or whatever you want to do to try to smooth things over. And of course, that is part of your responsibility if you're going to be staying with people. You have to kind of bring things home. You know, you have to be thoughtful and really make sure that you are contributing, because it's not cool, I don't think, to just entirely leech off of people. Or maybe it is cool in a very sort of abstract way, but in an emotional way, it doesn't feel all that good. They get tired of you a lot faster if all you're doing is leeching off of them. The rotation idea is fairly important. I mean, and the schedule would be up to you. I mean, you could stay with one person for a whole week, and then another person for another week, and then another person another week, and so on. Or you could give one person 2 days and another person 2 other days, and then stay at a stranger's place via couchsurfing.com another day. It would really be up to you and what kind of friends you've got and how close you guys are. I guess that's an obvious option, but the main thing about that is just to be sensitive to the person's feelings and kind of the chemistry that you two have and at other times might not have. Very different to that would be squatting. Squatting is really hard, and I've never done it, and I don't really have any desire to do it. Squatting is legally really, really controversial. Some people think that it's the smartest thing in the world. I happen to think it's brilliant. Buildings that aren't being used, yeah, you should use them. I mean, it's almost common sense. But of course, apparently someone owns the building or something, and the best squatters go in and repair a place and fix it up and make it actually respectable and livable. And in some states, there's some kind of law that says that if they've occupied that space long enough and can prove that they've occupied that space long enough, then those squatters get sort of de facto ownership of that building. Common law ownership, sort of. Some cities have that. Other cities, I imagine, do not. It really depends. And even in any of those cases, I figure you're going to go up against the law at some point, probably. You know, you're going to get kicked out, or you're going to be challenged as to whether you own that building or not. And that's a whole headache that, personally, I don't need. And it's one of the big reasons that I like to be an urban camper, because I can avoid that sort of bureaucratic mess. You could try it. You need to be careful about it. Not necessarily the safest thing. You've got to know the people you're hanging out with. And it's a group situation, typically. Or if it's not, then it's not all that safe, and you should be really kind of careful about it. So squatting is an option. I just don't know if it's really the option that I would choose, and I don't know much about it, so it's probably one of those things that I can't really speak very authoritatively on. But it happens all the time, obviously. So if that's something that appeals to you and is of interest, give it a shot. Do an HPR episode on it. Well, a variation, I guess, on the squatting idea that I have done is simply staying in random places, you name it. Think about all the places that you've been, that you hang out at a lot. And then think about all the places that you've been, like the places that you hang out at a lot. And now think of them as potential homes. Let me tell you some of the different places that I've discovered are particularly good as shelter. Colleges are great. If you can at all pass yourself off for a college student or a college professor or a college anything, such that you can get into a college building and then on a regular basis and then stay there overnight, it's a great place to stay. Colleges tend to be fairly active for at even the odd hours of night, because a lot of, especially in certain departments, like the department that I was in, filmmaking, you had people, or in multimedia, you know, you had people making stuff all through the night, all through the day. It was never a dull place. I've always kind of imagined computer science departments would be the same way. I would imagine that they would have a lot of activity, because I'm sure people are probably coding late into the night and stuff. So depending on the department that you might be able to latch on to, or that you might actually be a part of, you might find that that's a great place to stay. For maximum security and stuff, you kind of need to know, for this to work really well, you kind of need to know the schedule of that department. You need to know whether they lock all the doors of the classrooms or not, when the janitors come around, when the first class is. It would be kind of weird if you were like spending the night somewhere and like the class walks in and you're passed out on the teacher's desk or something. So yeah, you want to be mindful of that sort of thing. You want to be mindful of whether or not you're supposed to be there, obviously. Typically, when people find you in places that you're not supposed to be, they become very suspicious, they become very angry, and it's difficult to explain it away if you're there overnight. That makes it even more strange. So you need to be aware of that, and you need to typically have some kind of story ready to explain why you might be there. You can, generally speaking, get away with saying that you were studying and you fell asleep. That works pretty well once. Of course, that location is then pretty much dead to you, because then you're not going to be able to tell that story twice, probably. So you should always, and this applies obviously for every place that you're really not supposed to be, whether it's a car or a building or whatever, you should go in assuming that you're going to be caught. You're going to be discovered. Maybe not tonight, but maybe tomorrow night. You're going to get caught. And so you need to have some explanation. You need to spend some time thinking about those kinds of stories that you're going to tell someone. And again, social engineering. You know, you're going to have to convince someone that either you realize you're not supposed to be somewhere, but it wasn't exactly your fault, or that, oh, you didn't know you weren't supposed to be here at this time of night, or whatever. Or that you're waiting for a friend, or that you were studying and fell asleep. Whatever your story might be, you need to make it sound fairly plausible, and you need to be good at delivering a complete lie. So enjoy your practice of social engineering. Student lounges are not unheard of either. I didn't know this person, but I heard about a person who apparently slept in the student lounge every night, all semester. It was permitted because technically speaking, the student lounge was open 24 hours and he was allowed to sleep there. So apparently he did that. So colleges are good, really good for that sort of thing. I've definitely slept in a few different locations in a college. And workplaces might be good, might not be good. It, again, depends on your job. I really lucked out and had some great jobs for a while where I literally had, like, my own office, and I literally lived in my office for quite some time. I mean, that's gold right there. I mean, if you've got that available to you, you've basically got a free apartment. The potential risks there, of course, would be that your boss could find you and sort of figure out that you're living in your office, and that might freak them out, and they might want to fire you for it. They might love it and think that you're really dedicated and might give you a raise. You know, it just really kind of depends on your boss, I guess. But that's definitely something to think about. It was really, really beneficial for me. It worked out really nicely. I saved a lot of money. I got to be around computers all day and all night because this job was a computer kind of job. So I had no problem with it. And in fact, it was great. It allowed me to urban camp in any weather. That was really nice. So if you've got that available to you, again, great. Less prestigious sounding, and believe me, it only sounds prestigious that I had my own office. I was not deserving of the office. They just had too many offices, so they gave me one. But other places that I've known people to stay are places that they might have access to that other people don't. So like a janitor's closet, obviously it's not just a closet, but, you know, a janitor's station or whatever. Known someone to live in one of those. A kitchen, all-night kitchen. I've known some people to stay there. It wasn't in the kitchen, but it was like the room adjacent to the kitchen. But they were really the only ones with access to that, so they could stay there whenever they wanted to. So just keeping your eyes out for places that you can inhabit, whether people know it or approve of it or not, is a really good policy. And also, just like if you're going to make a neighborhood your new home, you need to scout out areas, because just passing it, you know, during the day and saying, yeah, that looks like a pretty great place, I think I'll try that, that's not enough. You need to be there. You need to keep an eye on it. You need to see what happens in that area. Do janitors come by? Do janitors only come by every other day? Are there security guards that are going to come by? You know, what's happening? What's going on? Or are there people who look dangerous? Like if it's in a place where you don't feel safe, you probably don't want to be sleeping there. The disadvantage to all of these places, or the risk that you're taking in all of these places, is that you don't have control over your environment. And I'm not just talking about temperature control and stuff like that, although that might be an issue. But I'm talking about, you know, there's going to be a night where you go to your normal place and you're thinking, oh, this is going to be great. I'm going to get some nice sleep. I'm just going to relax. It's going to be great. You show up and for some reason there are 20 people there making a lot of noise, having a party or something. So there's a danger to that kind of unpleasant surprise. And there would be one or two times where I couldn't seem to find a place that felt secure, or that wasn't being patrolled every, you know, 15 minutes by police for whatever reason. So there have been nights, and there will be nights, I think, where you just have to kind of sacrifice that night and just you get up and you go to an all-night diner or something and just chill, because that's all the option that is left to you. So be ready for that. In my mind, that's going to happen anywhere. I mean, I'm in an apartment now, and at 2 a.m. 2 weeks ago, people had a complete domestic disturbance style breakdown of roommate relationship, and they're yelling, and police were called, and this was at 2 a.m., and basically I got no sleep that night because of this activity. I don't mind that very much when a night becomes suddenly unpleasantly unrestful, and you are forced to move on out of your usual urban camping place. and find some other place to be that night. Or if you're not able to find another place to be that night, then you just have to sacrifice it and stay up all night. It's really miserable sometimes. It's unpleasant because you're tired, you can't sleep, etc. But again, I think that happens kind of everywhere, so it's not that big of a deal to me. But it is something to be aware of. And then finally, a word of caution. Homeless shelters are not good places to stay. I realize that they would actually sort of seem to be the ideal place to stay. They're shelters for homeless people. But again, just like I said in the first episode of this series, we're really not talking about that brand of homeless. And that brand of homeless tends to be a really troubled group. And if you're not that, then you shouldn't go to those places. I'm not saying to avoid anyone and to shun anyone or anything like that, but I am saying that just because you don't have a home doesn't mean that you are homeless. It really is a good thing about this new term, this urban camping term, because you're doing this for a different reason, and they don't really understand that at homeless shelters. And a lot of the people there are homeless because they absolutely do not want to be home. You know, they don't want to be homeless. They're simply homeless. So it's a different crowd. It can be frightening. It can be dramatic. I would avoid those very much. They've got enough trouble to worry about dealing with the things that they all have to deal with without someone waltzing in and just kind of saying, "Hey, I need a place to stay." I mean, they would let you, but I'm just saying that the surroundings are not the greatest. One place that kind of is the greatest, at least in my experience so far, have been hostels, youth hostels, HOSTELS. And you find these in larger cities. They're really popular over in Europe. You can go to Europe, move into a youth hostel, $10 a night or something like that. And it would be in euros, so I don't even know. But you get a bed, you have access to the kitchen, stuff like that, and it's just a bunch of traveling, usually students, staying in these houses with lots of beds. So they can just house a lot of people at the same time, so they can charge fairly little. And it's perfect. And they exist here in America as well, so I think probably mostly in cities and stuff. But if you ever needed a cheap hotel or something like that, or you just wanted to get out of your vehicle or college or office or whatever, for a night, you wanted an actual bed or something, remember those places may or may not exist in your area. That's about all I've got for shelter, I think. Shelter, I mean, there's no mystery to it. Scout it out first. Make sure you know the area, and then take the plunge and try it out. Try to spend the night there. Be very aware of your surroundings, always. And always follow your instincts. That's the huge one. There was never a time that I got an instinct that I would ignore, as irrational as that is and unscientific as that is. Simply kind of listening to your instincts, being aware of your surroundings, knowing when it's a good idea to stay in an area and when to move on, is very, very important. So build that skill up, I guess, and see where it gets you. And next episode, we will talk about hygiene. Yes. Hygiene is actually one of the most asked about aspects of urban camping that I get. I think quite literally the one question that I get more than anything else is, how do you shower? So you will find that out next episode.